Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films, Film Worker, Zama, and Disobedience. That was easy. Hi, David. How are you?
Okay, Jill. How are you doing this week?
Excellent. Cannot complain. Something. Whatever. How are you?
Well, that's good. Well, we had, I'm just fine, thank you, and we had three one-word titles this week, so your job of introducing was a little easier than usual. So, and the first film, actually, is one word. It's called Film Worker, and that is one word. And it is our only documentary of the day. In fact, it's a little bit different from the other two films in more than one way. But Film Worker is a documentary portrait of a guy whose name is not all that familiar, even to those of us who labor away in the vineyards of film criticism and journalism and so forth, a guy named Leon Vitali. So Leon Vitali is a guy, his biggest claim to whatever fame he actually had came way back in the middle 70s when he got a role in Stanley Kubrick's very, very great film, Barry Lyndon. That was way back in 1975. And it's a sensational movie. It has what is probably the defining performance of Ryan O'Neal's career, and it's just anybody who hasn't seen Barry Lyndon should absolutely see it and see it on the biggest, brightest screen that you possibly can. It's a real masterpiece. And this young British actor named Leon Vitali got the role of Lord Bullingdon. Barry Lyndon is a period film. And there he was, just acting this fairly small role, but he caught Kubrick's eye, and Kubrick thought he was pretty darn good and liked him so much that he actually expanded the role as the film was being made and made the role of Lord Bullingdon more important, and therefore made Leon Vitali's acting in the movie more important. And what happened after that is that he and Leon Vitali, Kubrick and Vitali, formed a sort of a bond. And it turned out that Vitali was a person of pretty much unbounded energy, and he had a lot of talent and ability, and he became Kubrick's assistant. But he wasn't an ordinary assistant. He was an assistant who Kubrick pretty soon realized could be called on to do almost anything. And he had this kind of flexibility in his abilities. And he was able and willing to do just about anything that Kubrick asked of him, and he remained working very closely by Kubrick's side for the rest of Kubrick's career. Kubrick died in 1999, so just before the absolute final touches were put on his last film, Eyes Wide Shut. So Leon Vitali was his faithful assistant all through The Shining and all through Full Metal Jacket and all through Eyes Wide Shut, and continued working with the Kubrick estate and so forth after Kubrick's death. So that is what Film Worker is about. And it's just a very, very interesting movie. Anybody who's interested in how movies are made will enjoy looking at this film. Certainly anybody interested in the great, especially the great later films of Stanley Kubrick, will be very interested in the movie. I just found it a very compelling film. It is not only for people who, deal with movies all the time. It's a real general interest documentary. And it has a lot of clips from various Kubrick films in it. And it has interviews with some of the people who worked on those films. Not all of them, unfortunately. Not everybody was interested in cooperating with this documentary. But it's just a very, very watchable, lively, interesting movie. It was made by a guy named Tony Sierra, and I recommend it. Film Worker, a good, interesting, lively documentary about the movie trade, and anybody, again, with an interest in Stanley Kubrick should be extra super absorbed by it. Next of all, our next movie this week with a one-word title, Zama. Zama is based on a novel, which in recent years has gotten a certain amount of acclaim, a novel by Antonio Di Benedetto. But more importantly, for my purposes or for my interests, it was written and directed by Lucrecia Martel. She is an Argentine filmmaker, and she is a terrific filmmaker, and I've become very, very interested in her work in recent times. There are not enough, as I frequently remark, there are not nearly enough major, well, major women filmmakers, women always have an uphill battle. The movies nowadays, as always since the beginning of their history, have been dominated by white men. And Lucretia Martel is one of those rare women who has developed and sustained a really major career. She's only made a handful of features so far, but she's really, really good. And Zama is her latest. So, because I want to just discuss Lucretia Martel just a tiny bit, partly because she's just a terrific filmmaker, and partly because, again, she is one of the rare, really major women filmmakers that has fought that uphill battle very successfully over the years. She is known primarily for three features. The first one, way back in 2004, is called The Holy Girl. Very, very interesting drama. Then, actually, that's wrong. The first one was called La Cienega. Very, very interesting movie about a sort of a dissolute Argentine family. I have a very, very watchable kind of melodrama. Then one called The Holy Girl, which has a very strong religious dimension to it. And then probably her most famous film until now, called The Headless Woman, which she made actually full 10 years ago, and that was her previous feature before now. The Headless Woman is not about a woman without a head in any literal sense. It's not a ghost story. It is about a woman who is involved in a sort of what appears to be an automobile accident. She clips somebody with her car in the very beginning of the film. And after that, through the whole rest of the film, she's in a bit of a fog. She's has a bit of sort of PTSD. She's kind of wandering around without being absolutely sure what happened or what is happening. And it's a very interesting portrait of this woman in this society where things like this can be very traumatic. So that's a very major film, and it's a movie that got a fair amount of play in the United States. And now she has made another film called Zama, and it's very different from those previous three films that I just mentioned, because Zama is a period piece. It takes place way back in the 17th century, and it is, it's what's sometimes called a costume or a sort of a costume drama, although it takes place sort of in the boondocks, so the costumes aren't all that elaborate. And it is about a guy whose name is Don Diego de Zama, and he is a Spanish I'm not sure if he's actually an aristocrat, but he has this job that he's gotten from the King of Spain. He is out in South America. The exact place is never quite clear. And he is the corregidor, the mayor of this little area down in South America. This is a movie all about colonialism. And what he spends his time doing is just dreaming of getting the next assignment that he has been promised, which will be back in Spain and where he'll be able to be, or maybe it's not even going to be back in Spain, but it's not going to be out in the middle of nowhere. It's going to be this dream assignment that he has in his mind where he'll actually be around a lot of other people and where things will be fairly comfortable and so forth, and that is what he is dreaming of. But we are in the old colonial days where not only the colonial people are the oppressed, but the people often who are assigned to lord it over the colonial people are sort of oppressed. And so it is very much a movie about the discontents of Don Diego de Zama and the discontents of the people who he is in charge of, over whom he is corregidor in this little out-of-the-way no place down in South America somewhere. So that is what the movie is about. Now, the movie is really a very, very detailed portrait of this guy's sort of life and times. It's dealing with him and all these different sort of assignments that he has to carry out and the people who he has to deal with and the various locals, and some of them are actually fairly aristocratic and most of them are more on the order of slaves or serfs. But it is also that with all of this detail, the movie does not follow an ordinary linear timeline, so that we're sort of moving around in time, not so much in space, but very much in time. And so you watch the movie and you're always sort of getting your bearings, just as poor Don Diego de Zama is sort of perpetually getting his bearings as he goes through this very discontented way of life, always remembering his own past, dreaming of what he hopes will be his own future, and sort of, drifting around, like the headless woman in that earlier movie by Lucretia Martel, or always sort of drifting around in something of a fog. And the movie's ending is extremely open-ended and ambiguous and even sort of vague. But as you watch the movie, which is about 2 hours long, it is moment-to-moment just fascinating. As I said, it's full of detail, but it's also just a kind of an impressionistic portrait of another time and another place. And so it's not a movie for everybody, but I totally recommend seeking it out, especially if one is interested in either major historical issues, such as all the issues connected with colonialism, or just interested in seeing movies that are fine-grained portraits of other times and places. I found it a very, very watchable movie, and I was just sort of swept away by it all the time. It's not my favorite Lucrezia Martel movie. That's probably La Cienega or possibly The Headless Woman, which are very, very, very fine films. This is a more ambitious film. I didn't find it quite so totally absorbing, but I was absorbed in it from moment to end, and I really do recommend it. And for our third film of the week, I would like to touch on a movie called Disobedience. And this is made by the very, very, very influential now and very, very interesting Chilean filmmaker. Along with Pablo Larraín, he is probably the most important Chilean filmmaker of our day. And is a very, very, very interesting filmmaker. And just last year, he had a film which got a whole lot of attention, called A Fantastic Woman, which is a story about transsexuality, and a very, very wonderful drama. We showed it at my cinema club. It was very well received. So now already, here's another movie from Sebastián Lelio called Disobedience. And now he is working with an English language film. And it is, as the title might suggest, it is about disobedience, but as the title does not suggest, it takes place pretty much entirely within a Jewish community, a very Orthodox Jewish community in England. And we have a woman who has been away from this community for a very long time, played by Rachel Weisz, by the way, and she returns when her father dies. Her father was a very, very powerful, respected, loved rabbi in this very Orthodox Jewish community in England. And she's been away for a long time, but now her father dies in the very, very beginning of the movie, and so she comes back home, and there she reconnects with her brother. It turns out that he's not her brother by blood, but they grew up together. He was actually adopted by the rabbi, and is the rabbi's designated successor in this community. So she comes back, and she reconnects with him, our heroine does, and also with the woman he is married. And she is very, very surprised. By the way, our main character, played by Rachel Weisz, her name is Ronit. And she is very, very surprised to find that her adoptive brother has married this particular woman. And as the movie proceeds, we discover that Ronit is, in fact, a lesbian, and that she had a lesbian affair with the woman who has now married her adoptive brother. So that's basically the setup for the movie. And so what this is really basically, even though these other major characters are very important, the brother, his wife, it is really the story of Ronit returning to a place where she lived for many, many, well, where she grew up, which is really her home, and finding that she is not really accepted there because she left the community, and that's because her father more or less cast her out while he was still alive, and also because of her sexuality, which is really not acceptable to this very traditional people. So we have at once the story of Ronit's homecoming, and that is the main thread of the movie. We also have our discovery and exploration of her former relationship with Esti, who was, again, the woman who is now married. I'll call him her brother. And we have her coming to terms with her family and her community and so forth. So that is what Disobedience is all about. And the title is very well chosen because in the eyes of the community, this amounts to disobedience. It's disobedience of the family heritage. It's disobedience to the Jewish heritage as they construe it. And it's disobedience to the whole norms and ways of the community. And yet, these are nice, decent, good, compassionate people in every way. They want to welcome her in. They just wish that she were a somewhat different person from what she is. And so the movie is exploring these kind of emotional cross-currents, even these spiritual cross-currents. So one of the main attractions of Disobedience is that it is very, very wonderfully acted. Rachel Weisz is just terrific. Rachel McAdams, who plays Esti, The lover back home, who is now married to the ultra-Orthodox brother, is also very, very good. They're all just marvelous, a terrific bunch of actors in this movie. And by the way, I haven't mentioned Alessandro Nivola, who plays Dovid Kupperman, who is now the chosen successor to the deceased rabbi. So it's a movie that is very much about a particular community, the particular ways and folkways and mores and so forth of this Jewish community. I am not Jewish. I am not English. I enjoyed the movie from beginning to end. I don't think in the end that it quite totally makes sense in a kind of emotional way. I found loose ends at the end. There are strings that were not tied up, and I don't think it's deliberate ambiguity, as in Zama, for example. I think it's a kind of I think the script was never quite wrapped up as entirely as it should be. So I'm not 100% happy with the way the movie is written. But the way it develops, its emotional pull, its acting, it's just a fascinating movie of a small, somewhat enclosed community and how they deal with someone who is at once an outsider and someone who is very much a part of them. So very, very interesting movie. If you want to see a good, absorbing, emotional drama, I recommend Disobedience very highly. And so there is my very upbeat story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you. As ever, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Film Worker, Zama, and Disobedience.